Hi, this is John Hinkes, president of Wisconsin Eye Public Affairs Network. And today I'm joined in the studio, and we're delighted to have with us Governor Scott Walker's appointee to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, Justice Rebecca Bradley. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
We're delighted that you've made some time in what I understand so far has already become a whirlwind schedule.
That's a good word for it, but I appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me today.
Well, it's delightful. I'd like to just have a conversational interview, if you will, and at some point I want to ask you to, if you could focus your comments toward high school students. One of Wisconsin Eye's initiatives moving forward is to employ our resources and take them into classrooms and really work with students to help engage them, help them to understand why their voice and their participation in a representative democracy is really important. And so as they explore the three branches of government, I think they would be delighted to hear a few words from you on topics that are important to them. So let's put them on the side burner for a moment and just dig into some general questions. In a recent interview, you were asked about your current position in life as a new member of the judiciary and as a former member of the judiciary in Milwaukee County. And you answered that question by saying that you feel, quote, very privileged, honored, and grateful, quote. Now, it's not as though you hadn't worked for it. An undergraduate degree with honors, law school, no easy cakewalk there. And then an early career in the private sector with leadership roles and some nice successes. So why honored, privileged, and grateful?
I am honored, privileged, and grateful to serve the people of Wisconsin as a member of the judiciary, and I view myself as a public servant. And I'm really excited and happy that I'm able to provide the public service that I do. And there aren't many people who are able to achieve through either the appointment process or the election process a position on the judiciary. And I'm just really excited to be able to do it. I absolutely love my job. It is a wonderful job. I love the law. I have a passion for the law and for justice. And that's why I use those particular words to describe how I feel about being able to hold these positions that I've held for the last several years.
Well, energetic and excitement ought to be added to the list, because there is an energy here today in this room. When you walked in, everybody just took their game up because of what you bring to the table. Let me just go a little bit further with that attitude. When one decides to become involved at this level in public service, it's certainly a personal conviction, but there's always a fair amount of people on the sidelines who are encouragers. They see somebody who's got drive and ambition and knowledge and expertise. So how much encouragement did you get to pursue the course that you're on right now? Where'd that come from?
When I was in private practice, I had started to serve as an American Arbitration Association arbitrator, and that was my first experience in a quasi-judicial role. And I really, as much as I enjoyed being an advocate and taking one side of a case or an issue, I really enjoyed being the decision maker. And it was over the course of a year or so that I was speaking to my colleagues as a lawyer, who encouraged me in the first instance to think about pursuing a career on the judiciary. And I thought about it for a while, and it really was a calling for me. I felt called to this public service because I believe it's so important to have judges and justices who understand their duty to say what the law is and to apply the law fairly, impartially, and independently. And so I did receive, in the first instance, a lot of encouragement from colleagues in the bar, and found some encouragement among members of the judiciary as well. And once I became a judge, I started to hear words of encouragement about thinking about pursuing a career on the appellate bench as well, and here I am.
You've done a fair amount of pro bono work and volunteer work, some in the realm of some pretty high hot button issues like human trafficking, and serving and helping families of disabled, developmentally disabled children. How do you find time for all that?
I have a very busy schedule, I always have, but I like to work hard. And when I'm working on something that I'm passionate about and that I enjoy, it really doesn't feel like work. I always enjoy, for the most part, the work that I'm doing. And when I did serve as an attorney representing families of developmentally disabled children who are reaching the age of majority to establish guardianships mm-hmm. for them, that was one of the factors that led me to want to pursue a career in public service at that stage of my career. And you mentioned my work with respect to human trafficking. That was something that was so shocking and dismaying to me when I served on the Children's Court bench in Milwaukee County, to find out that so many of our children in our community and around the state were affected by this this great evil. And I became very passionate about trying to contribute to a solution to end human trafficking in Wisconsin.
People who are passionate about those kinds of issues sometimes take it home with them, and they help perhaps unintentionally to shoulder some of that burden and emotion. I mean, do you draw lines of separation? How do you do that and yet wake up the next morning knowing that you've got to go do this job, yet just the day before you hear these tragic stories, you meet with these families who are going through dramatic challenges. Is that a tough thing to do?
It was tough, particularly when I was a judge in children's court, to separate my emotions about the devastation and devastating situations that I found children and people in. But I quickly found that I had to not take that home. It's difficult to do, but after a few months, I learned to create that separation, because otherwise it can really affect a person in adverse ways. But as a judge, I was somewhat removed from those situations. Mm-hmm. I give so much credit to the attorneys and the social workers and probation officers and people who work directly with these families day in, day out, year after year. They are very special people, and I admire them greatly for the work that they do.
If I am reading between the lines accurately, is it fair to say that your assessment of the way the system is working in Milwaukee County, despite what we might hear on talk radio, is that the system is working fairly effectively?
I think it does in most instances. The system, the child welfare system in particular, is really very overwhelmed. And those are difficult positions, particularly for the social workers who are handling very heavy caseloads in Milwaukee County and very difficult caseloads. But I think regardless of the role that the individuals within that child welfare system have to play, everybody, for the most part, is pretty passionate about the work that they do, and they're doing the best job that they can.
It's not an easy job, is it?
No, it isn't.
No. You are now a candidate for a full 10-year term on the court. Election coming next year. How do you manage and balance the rigors and expectations and the learning curve of your new position with that of what everybody is anticipating to be a high energy, expensive statewide campaign?
I had a little bit of experience with this on a local level. I had a contested election in 2013 to retain my seat as a Milwaukee County Circuit Court judge, and I learned a lot about the campaigning process, which is something that I really enjoy. I'm a people person, and so I enjoy reaching out to voters and getting to know people, and that part of the campaign trail I really enjoy. It is a demanding schedule. I'm very grateful that I had experience as a court of appeals judge and a trial court judge, because I think that prepared me very well for the position that I now hold on the Supreme Court. I will be working very hard to fulfill my responsibilities on the court and also to run a very strong campaign statewide.
Let's dial it back into Madison, into the Supreme Court. Some opinion writers and others have stated that the court has an image problem. Recent disagreements that have become public, some allegations of misconduct. The specifics of that are old news, but what is important moving forward is the collective DNA of this court and how it works together and works well together. So you're the new person. You bring in your particular skills and energy and so on. As you've contemplated your role and how you will blend in, share with our viewers, what's your attitude going in about the contributions that you intend to make to that collective DNA?
I'm very excited to get to work right away. I just started on Monday. I participated in oral arguments after spending the weekend reading all of the briefs. And I love the law. I have a passion for the law. And so I will contribute to the court my nearly 20 years of experience as an attorney and as a judge at both of the lower court levels to the Supreme Court. And I think I also bring a really positive judicial and personal demeanor and temperament. I've always been able to get along with all of my colleagues on the bench, and when I was a practicing attorney, even when I was in the midst of litigation with opposing counsel, I've always been able to maintain very positive and professional relationships, and I'm looking forward to working with each of my colleagues on the Supreme Court. And I received a really warm welcome from each of them on Monday, and so far I'm very much enjoying the work and the interactions with my colleagues.
As you look into the future and potential cases that may be bubbling up, are there any issues or topics that you see of particular importance to the state, whether in the realm of furthering economic development or whether in the area of First Amendment and free speech? I mean, is there anything that's coming up that really has got you thinking about the future of Wisconsin vis-a-vis the court?
I think each of the cases that end up being selected by the Supreme Court to be heard are extremely important to the state, whether they are related to criminal law or civil law. They're important not just to the litigants, but to potential litigants who might be facing similar issues and are looking for some guidance from the Supreme Court, for example, in areas where the law is unclear. And I'm just starting this week to take a look at what cases are coming forward for the court to consider. But I think each one of them are selected because they will have an important impact on the people of Wisconsin.
The language of the Wisconsin Constitution is not hand in glove with the language of the U.S. Constitution. In many ways, similarities absolutely, but when you start digging into First and Fourth Amendment, for example, mm-hmm. Does Wisconsin lead with its rule of law, with the text of the law, or do we defer to the interpretation, the more federalist view from the U.S. Supreme Court? And I know it's case by case, mm-hmm. but there are those who say steadfastly, we start in Wisconsin with the text of the Constitution, and the U.S. Supreme Court is not our lead. What are your thoughts on that?
That's a really great question, and you're right. It does depend on the particular issue and case. But as a general proposition, we're not bound to follow the federal interpretation, particularly when the language of the Wisconsin Constitution is different from the language in the United States Constitution. We do swear an oath to uphold both constitutions. And so as a general proposition, when we are deciding cases, if we can decide them consistently where the language it does not diverge in a significant way, we do try to follow the guidance provided from the United States Supreme Court. But where there is a substantial divergence, I think we look first to the Wisconsin Constitution.
Do you believe that that is the collective opinion of the current makeup of our court?
I wouldn't speak on behalf of my colleagues. I think their decisions and the body of case law that they've developed will speak for themselves.
Okay. So I was at a parent-teacher conference at my son's high school this week, and he had a group of friends around, and we were talking about legal issues because one of the kids is part of the legal or the young attorneys-to-be club at the school. And I mentioned that I might be interviewing you. And this bright young lady says to me, well, ask her what kind of soup she would be. And I said, soup? Well, yes, didn't you know that the Latin word for soup is also the Latin word for law? So please ask the new justice if she could be a soup, what kind of soup she would be. So I'm putting you on the spot.
I have never been asked that question before. I would love to meet that young lady. I'm going to tell you, the very first thing that popped into my mind was Campbell's chicken noodle soup, only because when I'm sick, that's what I want. That's what makes me feel better.
Good answer. I'll share that with Tiffany. Students as well are interested in learning the basics. Our conversations with schools and administrators and teachers around the state tell us that kids get ignited and excited when they understand first what each branch does, and secondly, when they can be shown real-world examples of issues that impact their lives. So at a very rudimentary level, vis-a-vis our coverage, kids are interested in seeing hearings and testimony about texting while driving, proposed changes to the law, mm-hmm. or legalizing, decriminalizing marijuana recreational use. If you were to speak to a group of high school kids about the work that you do and how it impacts their lives, what would you say?
Well, I would probably start with making sure that they understand what the role of the judiciary is compared to what the role of the legislature is in particular, because the issues that you mentioned that they're concerned with are really areas that the legislature makes laws about. And it's the job of the judiciary to evaluate the laws if there's a case presented to us, for example, challenging a law, to determine whether or not what the legislature has done is constitutional. If it is constitutional, it's our job to defer to the policy that the legislature has essentially enacted through the law that it's chosen to enact. And it's the job of the judge to apply that law to the facts of the case presented to us. It's not our job to say, I don't like the policy that the legislature has enacted in this law. I think the policy of the state of Wisconsin should be something different, so I'm going to say, we can't have this law. I'm going to invalidate this law. That's not the job of the judge at all. Our job is to apply the law. It's the legislature's job to make the law. The reason for that is that the legislature is composed of the elected representatives of the people, that the legislature is the people's voice. And if the people don't like something that the legislature does, they can elect new legislators and change the composition of that branch of government and have those laws overturned. That's how our democratic process works. But it's not for the seven justices on the Wisconsin Supreme Court to say, I don't like this law, and I'm going to make a new one through our judicial decision making. I would explain that those differences.
To those same group of kids, and this is part of where Wisconsinized mission is headed this next year, is to really reach into those classrooms. To that same group of that audience of students, in recent history, what is one example of a Wisconsin Supreme Court decision that kids could relate to and would really find value in exploring and looking at that as a learning experience? I mean, a lot of it has to, we had, as you know, a lawyer was before the court this week on a disciplinary matter. Well, that's not real exciting to high school kids, mm-hmm. but can you think of one that you would share with students and challenge them to investigate that?
I'm going to draw on a case that related to the work that I did at Children's Court, but hopefully none of the students I would talk to would ever find themselves in the position of the young person involved in this case. But one of the significant decisions that came down from the Wisconsin Supreme Court, I think it was around 2005 or 2006, related to the police interactions with a juvenile, somebody less than younger than 18 years of age, and how the police interact with that juvenile who may be accused of a crime. Because I think it's important for young people to know that they're treated differently under the law than adults are, and that's the same in our delinquency area of the law. And so the case I'm talking about is Jarrell C.J. in the interests of. And in that case, the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled, among other things, that all interactions, all interviews between the police and a juvenile who has essentially been arrested or taken into custody must be recorded if that's possible, if it's in a place of detention and outside of a place of detention where it is possible for the police to record that. Mm-hmm. And so that's an instance of where the law, again, looks at juveniles differently, recognizes that they're younger and they need additional protection because they don't have the maturity of an adult to handle a situation or an interaction with the police. But again, I hope none of the students watching this interview will find themselves in that position.
Hopefully not. One last question from the kids, and that is, within Wisconsin's electoral experience, we have a governor who's elected for 4 years, mm-hmm. legislators and state senators also in a relatively short window, and here's this entity called the Wisconsin Supreme Court with a 10-year cycle, mm-hmm. a 10-year term. Talk to the kids about why you believe a 10-year, or maybe you don't, but what is the value of a 10-year term for a Wisconsin Supreme Court justice?
It's an interesting question because I've talked to other elected officials in the other branches of government who are all envious of our 10-year terms because they have nothing comparable to that. But I think it's important to have the composition of the court change less frequently than for the other branches of government because, again, unlike the legislature, for example, who are the elected representatives of the people and are supposed to be responsive to what their constituents want, judges and justices are not responsive to what the people want because our number one constituent, if you will, is the law, and we swear an oath to uphold the Constitution and follow the law. And if the composition of the court changes more frequently, it's possible that we wouldn't have the continuity in the case law. There could be a lot of changes in different directions philosophically mm-hmm. of the court, and that shouldn't be because the law is what it is, and if it's applied in a fair, impartial, and independent manner without judges or justices letting their personal or political beliefs enter into that decision making, it makes for a more consistent body of law. And speaking as now a justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, it also gives us an opportunity to really delve into the law and get a very thorough understanding of the areas of the law and the issues that come before us so that we can be the best and most effective justices that we can be. Having said that, we still are accountable to the people because under the Constitution we have an elected judiciary. Mm-hmm. So if the people don't like the job an individual justice is doing, they certainly get a voice every 10 years.
I appreciate that. I know the kids will as well. What we'll do is we'll make a nice package as an educational tool and post this and promote it on our website for students. There was one topic of interest to an organization like Wisconsin Eye that bubbled up through the last budget and policy session of the legislature, and it had to do with open records and open meetings. We have a tradition going back to 1958 when Wisconsin's then governor, signed the nation's first open records and open meetings law at the county level, which became the model for the state openness laws in the state, and became a national model. And yet in this last legislative session, there, as we all read about, there was a proposal that died on the vine rather quickly to shut down some of that openness. Now, on the one hand, Wisconsin Eye is very grateful for the opportunity we have to have cameras in the Capitol providing gavel-to-gavel coverage. On the other hand, we're always nervous about where that openness may go, shrink, depending on the political winds. So as you come into the court, recognizing openness and accessibility is an important thing, what are your thoughts on our tradition of openness in this state, and how open should we be?
That's a great question. I can't really comment about the legislation that had been proposed, because it's possible that there might be legislation that's proposed in the future, and I could see that as an issue that might come before the court. But having read our Wisconsin Constitution and a lot of the statutes that speak to transparency in government and from our elected officials, I certainly will always uphold the Constitution and the statutes that promote that openness. And I think it is very important generally for the people to have a transparency in government so that they can see what their elected officials are doing, so that they have a full and thorough understanding of what's going on, because at the end of the day, it is the people's government. The government is the people, and they have a right to see and hear and know what is going on with their elected officials.
Well, one of the fun things that will be an additional perk to you is we've run the analytics, and when our Supreme Court is in action, our Google Analytics jump upwards, some days significantly, depending on the topic before the court, and we are seeing clusters of viewers from around the country in state capital cities. So in Albany and Sacramento, you are about to become known on a national stage in front of probably some of your colleagues and their staff around the country. But we're delighted that the court has a growing audience here in Wisconsin. And we know that every student who's graduated law school since we've been on the air in May of 07, so this would be Madison and Marquette, has an affinity, perhaps love-hate relationship with Wisconsin, depending on how many hours they were ordered to witness. But we greatly appreciate the openness that has been provided to Wisconsin to make the court available to all citizens. Well, let me ask this in closing. You're a Milwaukee born and raised.
Yes.
Milwaukee's got some great things going on right now, so this is not a legal question. Mm-hmm. And it also has some challenges. Mm-hmm. As we look to the future of Milwaukee, recognizing it's one of the most segregated cities in America, it's got some difficult crime issues, it's got some educational challenges. How does Milwaukee approach the future? How does Milwaukee become a better Milwaukee? I mean, it's your backyard growing up. Mm-hmm. You have an affection for that city.
I do.
What do we need to do as a state to help our biggest city become turn the corner in some ways?
I think there's a lot of great things happening in Milwaukee. As you mentioned, undeniably, it has its challenges. But what I see in Milwaukee, having grown up there and having spent all of my time living there other than when I went to law school in Madison, what I see happening increasingly is that people are coming together. Leaders from the business area, from the political world, from churches coming together to talk about the challenges Milwaukee is facing and to come up with some concrete solutions to that. And I think bringing together people from diverse backgrounds is really important, and diverse backgrounds racially and from different professions, different stakeholders who have different participation in areas of the city facing these challenges. And individually, I participate in two forums that talk about very frequently the challenges that Milwaukee faces. Community brainstorming at St. Matthew's Church on 9th Street in Milwaukee, and the Milwaukee Forum, which formed in the 1960s when race relations were challenged. And those organizations bring together people from all different viewpoints. They are racially diverse, and people coming from areas of law enforcement and elected officials in the media, leaders in business and nonprofits, and they come together to talk about the challenges that Milwaukee faces and again come up with concrete solutions. And I think that the more dialogue that we have that then produces positive action, we will collectively as communities come up with solutions and improve Milwaukee and continue to make it a really great city and hopefully fix some of those problems.
Are you seeing positive movement in that regard? I mean, it's one thing to meet and talk, but it's another thing to put plans in motion that really can impact and draw people in. I mean, it's disheartening at times when legislators from outside of the inner city make a proposal and it's pretty much dismissed because they're not in the stew pot, so to speak.
Right.
So your view, I mean, is it just not seen at this point? Are the results still brewing?
I think it's fair to say the results are still brewing. I think to speak to a specific challenge or issue, there is an increase in crime and juvenile crime in the city of Milwaukee in particular, but in Milwaukee County. And I think when there's a big problem and there's a lot of media attention on it and people are very nervous and upset at what's happening, an instinct is for people to start pointing fingers at each other, that it's the police's fault or it's the juvenile court judge's fault or it's the education system. And I think that finger pointing has really lessened, and each of those groups have come together, stakeholders in each of those groups have come together to talk about, okay, finger pointing doesn't solve a problem. Let's really look at this issue. We all have a stake in it. We all have an interest in it. This is our community. Let's talk to each other and come up with positive solutions. And from the police end, it might be, how do we alter our policing to deal with the uptick in juvenile crime? And in the juvenile court system, which I can speak to because that's where I came from, we were very solution oriented. How are we approaching these cases? What community resources can we suggest that need to get involved to help solve this problem? Educationally, what are some alternatives? How can we improve how things are handled in the school system, which tends to be sort of the first responder for some of the social issues that underlie the problems that lead to juvenile crime, for example. So I don't think action happens as fast as people would like to see it, and a lot of it's happening behind the scenes, but I think it is happening, and I'm really hopeful and optimistic that these we'll start to see some improvements in these issues.
Terrific. On behalf of Wisconsin Eye and our board, we're delighted that we have access to the court. We wish you all the best, and thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much. I appreciated the opportunity to be here.
Thank you.